Raw footage coming out of the cinema and into your ears.
35mm. Analog world. 35mm.
Welcome to Raw Footage, episode number 17. In this episode, we have another couple of films that were getting some Oscar buzz. And I actually saw these films in a double bill over in Bristol on the day that the Oscar nominations were announced. So during the course of this podcast, you'll hear the transition between potential Oscar nominations and actual Oscar nominations, which is kind of exciting. I know that there's a lot of people out there who don't really like the Oscars and don't like the focus that the Oscars gets, but it's kind of my theme. I mean, it's my purpose for seeing so many films is to see all these films which have been getting Oscar buzz and to make up my own minds about them. And that's what I like doing. So the Oscar preview show I'm going to record is going to be released in just under a month once I've seen all the potential Oscar nominees, even though I know which ones were successful now. So that's something I'm looking forward to doing, and you're just going to have to bear with me. So without further ado, let's have the first review of the day.
Sugar, you light my fire, now let's get started.
When well-known actors decide to step behind the camera and start directing, it doesn't always work. But one of the key factors in whether a actor becoming director is a success is whether they follow that old saw of sticking to what you know. Well, in this case, the actor in question did stick to what he knew. Ralph Fiennes is one of the finest actors, or certainly one of the finest British actors of this generation, and he made his name performing Shakespeare. So for his directorial debut, he decided to adapt and film a Shakespeare play. But it's not a very well-known one, not a very popular one. And it's therefore quite an interesting choice, because it's his version and his vision which will be the defining interpretation for the vast majority of people who see it. Ralph Fiennes decided to film and direct Coriolanus, and here's the trailer.
My name is Caius Marcius Coriolanus.
If ever again I meet him, he's mine, or I am his.
To our noble consul, Coriolanus.
Heavens bless my lord and husband.
You are a traitor to the people.
Right. Call me traitor.
Marcius is worthy of death!
I will fight against my country.
And then men die. my son.
Coriolanus
has grown from man to dragon.
Make you a sword of me!
Sweet as my revenge.
So now you find me in the departure lounge area of the Cinema Deluxe in Bristol. It's a double bill day of Oscar contenders, and given the choice, I would much rather come over here to Bristol than stay in Bath. Well, actually, both of the films today are only on in Bristol, so that made my decision easier. As I'm recording, the Oscar nominations have actually just been released, but whether by accident or design, there's no Wi-Fi in the cinema, so I'm going to have to go outside and check if either of these films that I'm going to see today did get nominated. The first one is fairly unlikely to get nominated, but it's interesting. And it was getting some Oscar buzz for Best Supporting Actress for Vanessa Redgrave in Coriolanus, which is the directorial debut of Ralph Fiennes, and he also stars as Coriolanus. It's based on the Shakespeare tragedy. And it's an interesting choice for Ralph Fiennes to make as his first directorial effort, because Coriolanus is by no means a well-known or popular play of Shakespeare's. I mean, it's one of his minor works, I suppose you'd call it. It's a tragedy set in ancient Rome. And I think it's kind of a good idea to adapt a play like this, because it's not well known. We don't know it very well. We have very little idea as to the plot. I mean, I didn't know what the specific plot was as I was going into it. So it's kind of discovering the play as fresh, even though it is in the Shakespearean language. And the script has been adapted from the original Shakespeare play by John Logan, who I believe worked on Gladiator. So he's spent some time in ancient Rome. And the script is actually very good, but it doesn't focus on Rome. It's all in modern dress. It's all very modern and militaristic. I mean, Coriolanus is a general, and through political machinations which are more or less out of his control, he gets nominated as a consul of Rome, and then almost immediately gets stripped of his consulship and banished. And it's kind of interesting because all of Shakespearean's tragic heroes have a fatal flaw. And in this case, the fatal flaw is actually very understandable. It's a sense of brutal honesty, which at one and the same time makes him appealing to the citizens of Rome, but also makes them worry about his potential tyranny. And that's kind of where the story goes. I mean, he is a character that it's never really clear if what he's being accused of is actually something he's going to do. My interpretation of what I saw on screen is that he himself is not considering becoming a tyrant, but it's the machinations of other people who don't want to lose their power who sort of accuse him of wanting to be a tyrant and set off the whole chain of events. Having this modern day setting, I mean, it is kind of a cool idea. And one of the ways that it does this is it has a lot of news programs. I mean, kind of like what they did in RoboCop, you know, having all the plot lines and explanations. I mean, all the exposition is done through this TV news program, including Jon Snow, which is kind of cool, who, for American listeners, is the Channel 4 newsreader and one of the most respected newsreaders in Britain. And he has a fairly extensive role in this film as the newsreader. Now, in most films, I would probably have a bit of an issue with this, saying it would be lazy just having these captions come up explaining exactly what's going on, and having these news programs being the mechanism of exposition. I would probably accuse it of being quite lazy for doing that. But in this case, I think it works for two reasons. One, because this is Shakespearean language, it is occasionally hard to follow, so having it boldly stated exactly what's going on and where everybody is does help. And the second reason is that Coriolanus isn't a well-known play, as I've just said, so we don't even have foreknowledge, or the vast majority of the audience, I suspect, won't have any foreknowledge as to where the plot is going, so it helps set everything up in that way as well. So these captions do come up, and I do kind of find them useful. I mean, and one of the coolest ones, one of the earliest ones, is a caption comes up that says, "A place calling itself Rome," which I think was very nice. Because this is all about an empire in decline, and the will of the people having something to do with that. I'm pretty sure there was some real footage of the Occupy Wall Street protests in this. I'm going to have to check that, but that's certainly what it looked like. And throughout the film, there is intercut, you know, this newsreel footage of real wars. You know, you have real tanks going down the road and all this kind of stuff. So it has this gritty, grimy attitude and design that really shows you that this is an empire in decline, a world in decline, a world that is on the brink. And it's really nicely put together, which it builds into the whole themes of the film, you know, of revenge and the necessity for politicians to appease the masses. I mean, that's basically what it boils down to. Coriolanus fails because he refuses to be a politician. He refuses to appease the masses and work up his military history into a political career. So there's lots of interesting stuff in this film, and it's actually very well directed. I mean, it's got some battle scenes which are very small scale, but just as good as anything in War Horse. And the political stuff is just as good, if not better, than, say, the Ides of March. So it's a really well put together story. I mean, if it wasn't called Coriolanus and if it wasn't in Shakespearean language, it would still have been an interesting story and an interesting film. And Ralph Fiennes, if he chooses to pursue directing again, is something to look out for. I mean, he did some pretty cool things with the material. So, a good film, an entertaining film, not one of Shakespeare's most popular plays, and therefore a very interesting film experience. Vanessa Redgrave playing Coriolanus's mother has been getting some Oscar buzz, and I can kind of see it, but she wouldn't be near the top of my personal list, and I'll have to check the Wi-Fi outside to see if she's actually got nominated. So I'm off to do that now. As it turns out, Vanessa Redgrave didn't get an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. And while I have small issues with a couple of the actresses who did get nominated, I probably wouldn't have replaced them with Vanessa Redgrave. So at the end of the day, I think justice probably was done on that front. But of course, you can hear all about that in my Oscar preview show, which is just around the corner. In fact, the only major awards consideration that Coriolanus has got is Ralph Fiennes has been nominated in the Best Newcomer category at the BAFTAs, which is slightly odd for somebody of his reputation and stature, but he is a newcomer when it comes to directing. And I think he deserves the kudos, because this is a very well-directed film. I mentioned the battle scenes in comparison with War Horse, which isn't really an accurate reflection of the film. The film it most reminds me of is actually The Hurt Locker, which has this sort of urban warfare, fast-moving, handheld camera style. And I was not at all surprised to discover that the director of photography on The Hurt Locker was also the director of photography on Coriolanus. So, I mentioned War Horse because I wanted a recent film, but it is The Hurt Locker that Coriolanus is most reminiscent of. As well as Vanessa Redgrave, I'll mention another couple of the actors in this film. Gerard Butler plays the nemesis of Coriolanus and does a really good job, I think. I mean, this is an actor who's most well known for taking his shirt off and screaming Sparta. And it turns out he can actually handle the Shakespearean dialogue. So, yeah, he did do a good job. And I didn't realise until I came home and looked it up, but one of the very small roles at the start of this film was played by Lubna Azabal, who won my personal Oscar for Best Actress last year. So it's good to see her getting some work as well. And I wasn't able to confirm that they used footage of the Occupy Wall Street protests. I have not been able to find confirmation one way or the other. But it certainly looks like they did, and it certainly fits in with the themes of Coriolanus. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did go back in and add some of that footage at a later date. So it is that kind of film where real footage is interjected at appropriate points. And again, that's a nice directorial choice by Ralph Fiennes. So yeah, overall, a decent film if you can cope with the Shakespearean language. And even I, as a former university English student, did have a little bit of a hard time with it. So yeah. So on to the next film.
I'm feeling adventurous tonight. Let's take things a little further, shall we?
The next film in today's show had Oscar push written all over it. It's directed by a multiple Oscar winner, stars a multiple Oscar nominee, and was written by an Oscar winner. And it's also a biopic, which the Academy Awards tend to love. The film is J. Edgar, and here's the trailer.
When morals decline and good men do nothing, evil flourishes. A society unwilling to learn from the past is doomed. We must never forget our history. We must never lower our guard.
Edgar, you will rise to be the most powerful man in the country.
It is my belief that when a man becomes a part of this bureau, he must so conduct himself as to eliminate even the slightest possibility of criticism as to his conduct.
Mr. Tolson, I need someone who I can trust. I want you to be my number two man. You understand? I need you.
Imagine if every citizen in this country were uniquely identifiable by the pattern on their fingers. Imagine how quickly we could find them if they committed a crime.
You remember that file we created on his wife?
Mrs. Roosevelt.
Will you make a copy for me, please?
Is that legal?
Sometimes you need to bend the rules a little in order to keep your country safe.
Please leave the transcripts here with me.
Feel free and share them with your brother, Mr. Kennedy. Let him know that I have a copy of my own.
The president is afraid.
All the admiration in the world can't fill the spot where love goes.
We are the sinners, Edgar. We tolerated lawlessness in the land until it grew to diabolical proportions. The blood is on your hands, Edgar.
What are your exact qualifications for your position of leadership in this bureau?
My qualifications, sir?
I don't know who I can trust anymore.
I see right through you. You're a scared, heartless, horrible little man.
Don't wilt like a little flower. Be strong.
Yes, Mother. It's time this generation learned the difference between a villain and hero. Even great men can be corrupted.
So now you find me in Cabot Circus, just outside the Showcase Cinema, where I've just seen the second film of the day in today's Oscar-worthy double bill, which was J. Edgar, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, directed by Clint Eastwood, and is a biopic of J. Edgar Hoover, unsurprisingly. This was getting a lot of buzz for Leonardo DiCaprio in the Best Actor category at the Oscars. But as it happens, just before I went into J. Edgar, I saw the official list released. And Leonardo DiCaprio was not on it. However, there was a really, really surprising nomination in the Best Actor category, which I will no doubt be discussing in great detail in my Oscar preview show, which should be coming up fairly shortly. Going into this film, I'd heard not really positive reviews about J. Edgar. There was a lot of stuff about how disjointed it was and how it pretty much whitewashed J. Edgar Hoover, which just goes to show that you shouldn't always believe everything you hear, because I actually really enjoyed J. Edgar. It was a lot better than I was expecting, and I think Leonardo DiCaprio did deserve serious consideration for Best Actor. It's exactly the kind of role that the Oscars generally like. It's a real life story with a respected actor and a respected director, with a character who has flaws. And J. Edgar Hoover's flaws are actually portrayed rather well in this film. But it did take me a while to get there, to get to that place of thinking that this wasn't a whitewash. For a good portion of the start of this film, I was thinking it was going to be a whitewash. They seemed to be indicating that J. Edgar Hoover was not necessarily a nice person. He did do illegal things, but always for the greater good. I mean, he basically blackmailed a series of presidents to keep him in his job. He was very self-aggrandizing and fame-hungry. He was only concerned with how dangerous the threat of communism was. I mean, even long after the threat of communism had passed, he was still consumed with the threat of communism. So the detriment of investigating things like the Mafia, which is not something that this film really approaches, and apparently in America this film has been getting a lot of criticism for the fact it doesn't address the fact that J. Edgar Hoover never went after the Mafia. But that's not something that really affects me. It doesn't bother me. I mean, it's fine. I mean, this film has got a lot of ground to cover, and it covers a lot of J. Edgar Hoover's life in a relatively interesting way. It's structured quite similarly to The Iron Lady, with the older J. Edgar Hoover dictating his memoirs, and as the memoirs are being dictated, it flashes back to these incidents in the history of J. Edgar Hoover and the history of the FBI. And for the start of it, I was thinking, A, this is a whitewash, and B, we're only getting J. Edgar Hoover's version of events. But both of those things change. I mean, we gradually get more and more information about J. Edgar Hoover and how much of a dick he was, basically. And it also addresses the fact that this is J. Edgar Hoover's version of events, and he is called out on it, which I really liked. But I think the one thing that this film is concerned with is the repressed homosexuality of J. Edgar Hoover, or the perceived repressed homosexuality of J. Edgar Hoover. Now, this is something that has been rumoured, and his critics often point that at him, but as far as I'm aware, there's no real evidence for his homosexuality. But the script was written by Dustin Lance Black, who won a screenwriting Oscar for Milk. So, yeah, he is concerned with the fact that J. Edgar Hoover might have been a homosexual. And this relationship, and he's sort of like, as portrayed in the film, the love of his life is this guy named Clyde Tolson, who is played by Armie Hammer. And their relationship is fascinating. I mean, as portrayed on screen, they never consummated their relationship, but they do clearly love each other. And it's the fact that J. Edgar Hoover had a really repressive mother, played brilliantly by Judi Dench. I mean, you'd expect nothing less. Judi Dench is awesome. But J. Edgar Hoover's mother was so concerned with her son not being a homosexual that she basically forced him to repress his true nature, or at least that's the portrayal that this script and this film puts on J. Edgar Hoover's life. Now, I'm sure there's issues historically with this, but that's the angle that the film wants to go down, and we have to take it on those terms. And it is portrayed really, really well. I mean, there's a brilliant scene where there's potential for this relationship between Edgar and Clyde to be consummated, and it develops in some fascinating directions and is brilliantly played by both Leonardo DiCaprio and Armie Hammer. So, yeah, it's a great acting performance. Although one criticism I did hear of the film, and one that I completely agree with, is the aging makeup of Clyde Tolson, played by Armie Hammer, is terrible. He looks like he's wearing a rubber mask. I mean, obviously he is wearing a rubber mask, but you don't need to look like you're wearing a rubber mask. Whereas the aging makeup for Leonardo DiCaprio and Naomi Watts playing J. Edgar Hoover's faithful secretary, in both those cases, the aging makeup I thought was actually pretty good. So I'm not sure what the problem was with Armie Hammer's aging makeup, but it wasn't good. So yeah, as portrayed in the film, J. Edgar Hoover was self-aggrandizing, fame-hungry, a massive racist, a paranoid about communism, and a utterly repressed homosexual. And taken on those terms and given this portrayal, I think the film is actually very good. I didn't expect to enjoy this film as much as I did, but yeah, perhaps Leonardo DiCaprio should have got an Oscar nomination. It's worth pointing out that while this film does dwell on the more negative aspects of J. Edgar Hoover, it even has one scene which addresses the more scurrilous rumours about the fact that J. Edgar Hoover was a cross-dresser. While a lot of the film does focus on these negative aspects, this is not a character assassination completely. It does point out the good things that J. Edgar Hoover did. Most notably, he was a pioneer of forensic science and insisted that the FBI had scientific labs and was a strong advocate of centralized fingerprint databases. And that's one of the major points in the early life of the FBI, was his desperate attempts to get this centralized fingerprint database he wanted so much. When you're viewing a biopic, you always need to be aware that this is an interpretation of the life of a famous person. And that statement has never been more strongly stated for me than when I was watching this film. I am willing to believe that J. Edgar Hoover had homosexual tendencies, but I'm not necessarily willing to believe that this utter repression of his homosexual nature affected his life to the extent that it is portrayed in this film. And it's always worth remembering that the script writer of this film, Dustin Lance Black, is a prominent homosexual advocate in Hollywood and did win an Oscar for Milk, about the first gay politician in America. So, as a homosexual, he has focused the entire film, more or less, on this homosexual relationship, consummated or not. And that's a little too much for me. It's certainly an aspect of J. Edgar Hoover's life that needed to be addressed, but perhaps not to the extent that it is in this film. Having said all that, you do have to take the film on its own merits, and presented with this choice of having this homosexual relationship at the core of the film, it's a brilliant portrayal by Leonardo DiCaprio, and Armie Hammer for that matter. And it did end up being a much more entertaining film than I was anticipating it being. So, as you heard throughout this show, the Oscar nominations have been announced, so I can start preparing my Oscar preview show in earnest. Even with all my efforts to watch all the Oscar-nominated films, there were still three films which were such a surprising nomination that I haven't actually seen them. So I've got some homework to do. But I will be cogitating and making my own choices and deciding who got snubbed. And the Oscar preview show will probably be released around the 20th of February, which will be the Monday before the Oscar ceremony on Sunday the 26th of February. So you can look out for that, and I will be busy filling in the final gaps of films that might have got nominated, so I can make my decisions and broadcast them to you. And in the immediate future, there will probably be one episode next week, more than likely on Wednesday or Thursday. So that was Raw Footage. I've been your host, Colin Gaisley, from Bath, England. And I'll see you the next time I come out of the cinema and into your ears. Raw Footage is an Ouroboros podcast production. Homepage can be found at raw-footage.co.uk. Comments and feedback can be sent to rawfootagepodcast@gmail.com. The intro music to this show is by Oliver Benjamin Thayer. The outro music is by Vicky, both used with permission. Idents provided by Dr. Brandy Sexy Voice of the Inside Outcast. Trailer audio is included under the Doctrine of Fair Use.